Nuketown Radioactive number 35 for August 7th, 2006. Well, folks, welcome to the much-delayed Radioactive number 35. I am your host, Ken Newquist, and, you know, I actually sat down and started recording this podcast last Monday, and I got about halfway through it. I thought I was doing really good, and then, you know, life just came crashing down on my aspirations to actually finish the podcast and get it up later that night in the form of a heat wave, which was just excruciating here on the East Coast in Pennsylvania, in the form of basically what happened was is that because it was so hot and because our house doesn't have central air, we had to have we do have air conditioners. We have air conditioners on the third floor, and we have in the office, and we have an air conditioner on the first floor that I put in particularly because of the heat wave. So I set it up. I set up the air conditioner downstairs, actually, because we had a bunch of... that's the gaming room now. Can you tell I'm hyped up on caffeine? That's the other reason why I'm being able to do this right now, because I've been drinking nothing but caffeine since I got home. Because I knew today I would have, like, 4 hours of time that I could work on Nuketown stuff, the podcast, all that good stuff. So, I've just been drinking Mountain Dew since about 4 o'clock this afternoon, and I'm going to keep drinking Mountain Dew until I actually get all cut up. But anyway, the whole reason why there was an air conditioner in the dining room in the first place is because that's the gaming room now. And, you know, you don't really want a bunch of gamers in the same room for, like, 5 or 6 hours without some sort of air conditioning and just relying, you know, just the heat would be too much, and a fan wasn't enough. So we got the air conditioner downstairs. So what ended up happening was that my daughter Jordan and I ended up going to the third floor, where I slept on the guest bed. She slept on her little fold-out bed. It's like this little poo kind of sofa bed. So she slept on that. I slept on the guest bed. Meanwhile, Sue's downstairs with the baby, and he's sleeping in his bassinet, and she's sleeping on the sofa bed. So, and we did that for, I think, about 3 days during the absolute height of the heat wave. And, you know, that just kind of just blows away any chance of trying to sneak in a little getting stuff done time when all the areas in the house where I could possibly work are occupied by people who are trying to sleep. So, long story short, everything just kind of came to a crashing conclusion. And then to To add to all this, last week the power went out on Thursday, not because of the heat, but because of the thunderstorms that came through after the heat. And I don't even know if that was it. All I know is that like some sort of a fuse blew on my street, and I didn't have power for 9 hours. So what I ended up doing was watching the old sea monster movie Deep Rising on my PowerBook while I hand wrote my notes for the my Dungeons & Dragons campaign the next day. So, I mean, it was kind of cool because Sue ended up taking the kids out to her parents' house. So I was home alone. The challenge was that, you know, there was no power. And I had a limited amount of time to watch the DVD and just get my notes together. So anyway, it was fun just kind of camping out by candlelight downstairs. Had a little flashlight out and just kind of geeking out and relaxing for a couple of minutes. But anyway, the good news is that Radioactive is finally back after, after all of the craziness of the last week and a half, and after, the last 6 minutes of me babbling. So the opening music, in case you're wondering, is the track called Cut to the Chase, which is from the role-playing game source book, the Sharn City of Towers. And I'm going to be reviewing that source book and the CD later on in the podcast. Now, a lot of stuff going on Nuketown. There's some new content up. First of all, I've got a review of the Superman Returns soundtrack. I'm not really going to review the movie. I enjoyed the movie, but I enjoyed the soundtrack more, so you can get to that review through the show notes. And I also have a write-up about a new book that's coming out called The Space Opera Renaissance, which is pretty cool. It pulls together a whole bunch of short stories and novellas from across the history of space opera. And this isn't just, you know, this isn't necessarily the kind of Buck Rogers-y kind of space opera, but we're also talking about things like authors like David Brin, Peter Hamilton, people who've managed to kind of rein in some of just like the pulpy stuff and give you a little bit of science, give you a little bit of adventure, and mix it together into something that's a really fun, fast read. So I'm looking forward to this book coming out, but I've promised myself that I'm not going to buy it until I finish its sister book in the its sister anthology, The Hard SF Renaissance, which longtime listeners will know that I have been working on forever. I'm about halfway through that book now, and I'm thinking that if I make a concerted effort, I might actually be done with it by, say, October. So that the Space Opera Renaissance will probably be on my fall reading list. I've got some new writing up as well. You can check out my review of the Battlestar Galactica collectible card game on sci-fi.com, and the link will be up in the show notes. That review actually went up back in June. And then I've got two new columns out for Knights of the Dinner Table. The Summon Web Squire columns are D20 Adventures, which is a list of a whole bunch of free D20 adventures that you can find online. And in number 116, we've got a whole bunch of sites relating to the Serenity RPG. Now, and this is turning out to be a huge, like, kind of sum-up show or catch-all show housekeeping show. That's the word I'm looking for. Yeah, housekeeping show, because I got a lot of comments from Radioactive number 34. Folks like the Arkham Horror review, and I'm planning to do another game review real soon. I think that they'll probably correspond, the frequency of those guest reviews will probably correspond to the monthly board game sessions that my friends do. And I think the next one will probably be Pirates of Davy Jones' Locker, which is the constructible strategy game from WizKids. You build the little boats, and you go, and you explore little islands and steal gold and try to avoid sea monsters. It's a really cool game. And I've thought about reviewing it before then, but I'd really like to get some of the opinions of the guys into the review. So that's I was glad to know that people liked the Arkham Horror review. Now, moving on next, Jim from The Vintage Gamer suggested checking out the Mad 3 of Gamer the Podcasting's new how-to vlog, and Scott Nielsen's Board Gaming with Scott vlog, in which he runs through the rules and pieces of different games on camera. And that was in response to my request for vlogs. And now, actually, I have a huge number of vlogs, and I think, I don't know what show I'm going to do it on, but coming up pretty soon, I'm going to do a show that talks all about video podcasts and stuff that's really worth watching, because it turns out there is a lot of stuff out there that's actually pretty good. And it's it's really saving my sanity because it allows me to kind of geek out in the morning while I'm up at like 5 with Lucas, feeding him a bottle, eating my Cheerios, and now I can watch these different video podcasts. So it's pretty cool. Now, also, Jason of Random Signal suggested that I check out the Durham 3 podcast, which features a group of players who chat about issues in gaming, then pause to play their game, and then do a roundup of that game afterwards, which sounds like a really cool idea. And actually, I thought about doing something like that with my campaign, but, you know, I just don't have the time or the energy to do it all. But anyway, that sounds like a really cool idea, and I'm definitely going to check that out, and, well, check out all these podcasts. So, thanks to all of everyone. This is going to be one of those kind of disjointed podcasts where I just stumble over all of my words because I'm kind of out of practice. But, you know, that's all right, right? I'm going to check out all these podcasts, and I am just glad to get all the feedback. So, you know, please send me more. You can post comments in the show notes, or you can email me at nuketown@gmail.com.
Follow the Path, the Bears Grove podcast. Adult-level discussion of role-playing as a storytelling art at bearsgrove.com.
Now, last time around on Sites of Note, I talked a little bit about The Vintage Gamer, but I didn't go into too much depth because I hadn't actually listened to the show yet. However, over the last 2 weeks, I had a chance to catch up on a bunch of them, and I gotta say, very cool podcast. It does reviews of classic... Yeah, you know, a lot of this stuff works a lot better when you write it out in the show notes than when you actually try and say it out loud. But anyway, Jim Van Verth does reviews of classic board games, card games, and role-playing games, computer games, just, you know, all your classic games. In this podcast, he is married to Mer Lafferty of Geek Fu Action Grip fame, but strangely enough, I don't think I found him that way. I think I ended up finding him through Goblin or something like that. And actually, he also emailed me. Last week, but anyway, as this train wreck progresses, some of the stuff that he has reviewed includes the book versus book Ace of Aces, which was a really cool game, and I remember seeing these. I think it was back in the 80s when these were released, but basically the idea was that you try and say basically as many times as you can. No, the point of the game was that you have two books, and the books are key to one another. And it's kind of like almost that choose-your-own-adventure thing if the choices you made forced the person with the other book to do something. So the idea here was that you were fighting with biplanes, and that you would choose a page, and you would choose a maneuver which would have you turn to a page, which had to have your opponent turn to a page, and you would try and shoot each other down. So, if that sounds a little strange, then I'm not doing a good enough job explaining it, and you guys don't remember what I'm talking about. So, obviously, you need to go and listen to Jim's podcast so that you can understand exactly what all this is, because he does a much better job of explaining the game than I just did. He also reviewed the ancient strategy game Mule, which you would have thought that being a Commodore 64 kind of guy and being into computers in that era that I would have played this game, but surprisingly, not. I guess I was too obsessed with Ultima 2 and Ultima 3 and Ultima 4 and spending countless hours of my life playing those games. He also reviews the board game Acquire. That's probably going to be the next podcast of his that I want to listen to because I really enjoyed Acquire and I'd like to hear what he has to say about it. And he also reviewed the new edition of the game Fury of Dracula, comparing it to a previous incarnation. That sounds like a pretty cool game. Another collaborative game that's out there, and if you listen to the last podcast, you know that my group is kind of into collaborative games right now. So I think that might be one I need to add to my Christmas list come the fall. This is what happens when you just follow the show notes way too closely. The next site I want to talk about is the 95 Theses of Geek Activism, which was a blog post that was made back in late July, and it was a pretty cool blog post. Basically, he takes the whole Martin Luther 95 Theses thing and applies it to geek activism. And there's a lot of, I think, good ideas in here, because one of the things that I've noticed about geekdom is that, you know, we're very passionate about things, but we're not always... That passion can kind of get in the way of rationally trying to convince other people, particularly non-geeks, about the wisdom of your viewpoints. And basically, the 95 Theses of Geek Activism talks about, for one, various ways of articulating your opinions, but also kind of trying to bring into focus what the values that geeks share, especially when it comes to technology and those sorts of things. So it's definitely worth a read. I'm going to give you a couple of the theses that showed up. First one, top of the list, reclaim the term hacker. If you tinker with electronics, you are a hacker. If you use things in more ways than are intended by the manufacturer, you are a hacker. If you build things out of strange, unexpected parts, then you are a hacker. Reclaim the term. And I think that just described almost all of my home improvement projects, so I guess I can call myself a hacker. The next one would be, the true enemy is the line, if you haven't done anything wrong, then what do you have to fear? Here's another one. Treating your customers like criminals or potential criminals will turn customers away. So I thought it was a really good read. You know, I don't necessarily agree with everything that's on the list, but I think it's definitely good food for thought, and I would recommend checking it out. The link will be in the show notes because it's way too long, but basically the website for it was www.scienceaddiction.com. And before I forget, the website for The Vintage Gamer was www.thevintagegamer.net. But of course, the link will be in the show notes. Last thing is, I thought this was pretty cool. There was up on MySpace, there was a video of Zach Braff interviewing Kevin Smith. And basically, they're talking about Scrubs, they're talking about Clerks 2, and they discuss building a fan base, exploiting the internet. Kevin Smith kind of rambles on about how much he loves MySpace, which was pretty funny. But, you know, I like these guys. I think they're pretty cool. Definitely have their very geeky aspects. So, you know, if you like Scrubs, if you like Zach Braff's Garden State, if you like any of Kevin Smith's work, check it out.
You must be listening to the Goblin Broadcast Network at gbn.com. Amazing!
So next up on the podcast, I want to do something that I really haven't done before, which is a combination game and music review. It sounds a little odd, but you know what? It actually works. The game is the RPG supplement Sharn City of Towers for Wizards of the Coast's Eberron campaign setting. And this is actually, let me back up for a second here. The book is Sharn City of Towers. It was written by Keith Baker and James Wyatt. It's 192 pages long, published by WotC. There'll be a link to it in the show notes where you can get it from Amazon or just, you know, read other reviews. This is an interesting book. The book basically has its 192 pages where it's all source material. But packaged with the book in the very back is a CD with 9 tracks, I'm pretty sure, yeah, 9 tracks of music to set the mood for Eberron, which it's just awesome because, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've had conversations with people or we've talked online or whatever about music and gaming, and, you know, we kind of end up falling back on the old standards of Conan and the new standards like Lord of the Rings. But, you know, how often have you listened to it, have you read a game and just kind of imagined the soundtrack in your head and wished that there was some way to make it real? Well, that's what they've done with Eberron. I'm kind of surprised they didn't include the CD with the actual campaign book, but, you know, maybe there were cost considerations or something with regards to that. But I like it. I think it's a cool idea. I think more people should do this. So, for those of you who don't know, Eberron is Wizards' pulpy, noir-inspired campaign setting for Dungeons & Dragons. Sharn City of Towers details the setting's largest metropolis. It describes over 100 city districts, a dozen new guilds and organizations, and loads of NPCs, and it has lots and lots of maps. So, you know, as a DM, as a gamer, oh, awesome book. I love source books where you can just sit down and just read through page after page of campaign detail. That's just, that's why I have to really restrain myself from going out and immediately buying Poultice, I think that's how you pronounce it, Monty Cook's huge $100 city book setting, which sounds awesome, but I really don't have $100 to spend on a game supplement right now. However, back to the book. The book is good for anyone who's running an Eberron campaign. It's got a huge amount of information about the city, and you could easily run a half dozen campaigns just based on what is in this book. You could also easily use this book at the same time to provide a base of operations for, you know, continent hopping, world-spanning campaign where this becomes the base of operations for the PCs, because you can do so much here between adventures, and it provides a really great place for players to come and unload all that gold. It's also good for DMs looking for inspiration for their own urban campaigns, and this is actually... I got the book for two reasons. One, I like Eberron. I don't know if I'm ever actually going to get to run Eberron, but I thought it would be a good source book to have. And also, I'm running an urban campaign right now, an urban fantasy campaign called Dark City, which is a Dungeons & Dragons campaign. It's a medieval setting. It's in a homegrown city of our own design. But, you know, when I found myself reading this book, I thought, wow, I found myself thinking about how I might want to change up the campaign, you know, how I might want to organize my own notes or organize the website. And it just kind of served as a really good idea factory for inspiration for what I want to do with Dark City. Now, my campaign is set in Greyhawk, very different setting from Eberron, but, you know, a lot of it is kind of plug and play. It wouldn't take that much to kind of change out a few things from Eberron and fit it into my home city. So it's definitely good as inspiration. And I think that Eberron, although different from a lot of what's come before, retains enough of the core D&D values and the core D&D system that it should be easy for anybody to transport this content into just about any other setting. This book's single biggest fault, and I will join into the choir, who will repeat this ad nauseum until gaming companies get the idea, is that there is no index. And now repeat after me, gaming companies. All role-playing game books need indexes. I don't care if you have to cut content in order to do it. I need an index, because your book is less useful to me if I can't find anything in it, and without an index, finding stuff, well, it's difficult. And especially a book like this, where you have hundreds upon hundreds of entries for NPCs and guilds, and, you know, I mean, you're going to either end up going mad, jotting down what the page numbers are, or filling the whole thing up with sticky notes, and none of that's actually going to work. Or what you could do is go to Keith Baker's website and downloading the Sharn Index PDF that's there. And then I have a link to the PDF in the show notes. So great that Keith saw the need for this and put it up on his website. Many thanks and great kudos to him. I just wish that... Hell, I just wish that every freaking source book, I don't even care if it's a freaking module, come with an index. Now, on to the music review section of the podcast. In a fairly unique twist, the game ships with the aforementioned 9-track CD designed to set the mood for Eberron. There are a bunch of different kinds of tracks, and I think it really does the job. Now, the cool thing about this is again, you should be able to pull these tracks and use them in your own campaign without a great deal of difficulty. There are some that are really exotic that don't necessarily fit the mood that I'm trying to strive for. But, you know, if you're looking for something that's a little bit more urban, or you're looking for something that's got a little bit more adrenaline to it, and that doesn't immediately evoke Lord of the Rings, this is definitely a good option for you. And they've got three tracks that are available for you to try out through the website, and I've got a link to it in the show notes. The book came out in 2004. The tracks have been there since then, and I've actually had this bookmark for like a year to review for the show. So you should be able to get to them. And I'm going to play some excerpts from them now. So the first one I want to play is called Sharn, City of Towers. Thank you. Since I don't explicitly have permission to play the songs, although they're freely available on the website, I figured I would better just play excerpts and, you know, play it safe. But anyway, that was Sharon City of Towers, which I think was a pretty good track, and I think it's fairly representative of what's on the CD in terms of quality and sound and just kind of the feelings that it evokes. The music is by David Davidson. His website's at www.d2world.com. Not a heck of a lot on his website, and actually not a heck of a lot about him with regards to biography information on any of the stuff on Wizard's site, but all in all, I think he did a pretty good job. Now, there is another track I want to play called Exploring Zendurk, which is the lost kind of spooky continent where, you know, jungles and the ruins of an ancient civilization and horrors that man was not meant to know. But anyway, here's the track. So, you know, it might fit your campaign, it might not. Personally, I'm so hungry for new gaming music that I think that the CD is almost worth picking up the book. I guess that's going a little bit too far. I don't know if I'd spend, let me see, how much was this book again? $29.95, so almost $30. But, you know, of course you can get it for cheaper on Amazon. But still, you know, a pretty good book. I mean, it's got a decent page count, great art, laid out well, with the exception of the index, and, you know, 9 tracks of music that you can use in your campaign. So I think that it is definitely a good buy for anybody who likes D&D, especially any DMs looking for a little inspiration for their urban campaigns, or who just want to mix things up with their music. Now, in terms of other stuff that's coming out that's mixing games and music, Goodman Games and Midnight Syndicate have teamed up to create a module based on, I'm not exactly sure how all this works out. I don't know if it was the original CD that Goodman Games created the adventure for, or if Goodman Games created the adventure and then Midnight Syndicate scored it, but one way or another, they are releasing Dungeon Crawl Classics, The Cage of Delirium, which seems pretty cool. It's for character levels 6 to 8. It involves the classic ye olde haunted house. 64 pages long. Due out August 2006. And my understanding was that it was coming out after Gen Con. Which, yes, I wish I was at Gen Con this year. But alas, folks, there are some things that new dads just cannot, absolutely must not do. And going to Gen Con, leaving their wives home with a 6-week-old, just it would qualify as one of those things. But I will be there next year. So that little side trek done and over with sounds like a cool idea. I've been in touch with Midnight Syndicate, and I'm really hoping to review this thing when it comes out. So I am eagerly awaiting it because, again, more gaming music is always more gooder, and this sounds like a cool idea. I've done one of the Dungeon Crawl Classics back at MeepaCon, I think 2 years ago, MeepaCon being one of the big conventions in my area. And they seem pretty cool. They're They're definitely old school, and they may be a little bit too old school for some, but this sounds like it could be a pretty cool adventure, and it might even fit in my campaign. Who knows? So I'll be looking forward to that, and I'll let you guys know when the review copy arrives. Well, I was going to play another promo for somebody else's podcast, but then I realized that I don't have any other new ones. So that will be an oh-so-subtle request for folks to send in new promos, because I need more. You can send them to nuketone@gmail.com. And if you want to get in touch with me, you can use that email address. You can also Skype me. I'm on pretty erratically, but, you know, you could try, right? The username's Nuketown. And, of course, you can post comments to the show notes, and I encourage that. We've actually got quite a few users up on Nuketown now. I think we're up to 20-something. People have been commenting, you know, kind of here and there, but it's good that the community's coming together. And once I get off my butt and actually start posting more stuff that's worth commenting on, I think we'll have even more going on. So that's about it for now. With any luck, I'm going to type up the show notes for the next podcast and record it tonight before the caffeine buzz finally ends.